KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, fans came out in force for a recent celebration of all things Disney. But major changes are afoot in the Magic Kingdom. Plus, was the Toronto Film Festival a bloodbath for indie filmmakers, or just a typical dip in the world of independent film? But first, the Hollywood News banter. Stay close, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by The Business producer, Matt Holzman. Matt, what is going on?
Well, the Screen Actors Guild have elected a new president and a new board, and the winner is Ken Howard.
The White Shadow. Yes, a representative of the more moderate faction. And nonetheless, he is sending out signals that he is going to play hardball when the negotiations begin on the issues of new media and other contentious subjects.
We certainly will be talking about that more in the future. The other big, big story is that to the astonishment of most people in the business, Disney fired Dick Cook, the chairman of the Walt Disney Studios.
It was very unusual. It was the eve of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and people were findable. They went on the record. Normally, Hollywood kind of shuts down for the holidays. People went on the record, people like Scott Rudin and Johnny Depp, and talked about, and Jerry Bruckheimer, and, you know, all said how shocked they were. And, you know, some of them were obviously quite upset. And that is something where I'm not sure this is you get an A-plus for the handling. I don't know if there's a graceful way to fire somebody after 38 years, but this was not, didn't seem like even a fair attempt.
But by the way, I want to say Disney insists that he was not fired, that he stepped down voluntarily. But
apparently there was a brief conversation in which Bob Iger, the chairman, expressed some discomfort, and Dick Cook said, "Would you be more comfortable if I weren't here?" And that was like a 10-minute conversation, and he was out pretty much immediately.
After 38 years at the company, a 10-minute conversation.
Yes, beginning when he was a ticket taker on the monorail and the steam engine rides.
Right.
So he was the living link to old Disney. And this is a big change and suggests that Bob Iger is indeed aggressively rebranding the Walt Disney Company.
It's interesting because obviously Disney's brand is a lot about what Disney was, and Dick Cook represented a lot of that. He was the one link to what, you know, the Disney that we all know and love.
He was a link, and I think he really did regard himself as the guy who understood what Disney was and was going to maintain those traditions. And I think Bob Iger perceives himself as the guy who's bringing Disney really forward and chasing after a young male audience. They have this new XD cable channel. They bought Marvel. They're, I guess, going to do more guy things. I think they're also going to change the model of what they're doing with that studio because they have a bunch of suppliers now, as some have remarked. They have DreamWorks putting in movies. They have their own Pixar division putting in movies. They have Jerry Bruckheimer putting in movies. So you don't necessarily need an old-fashioned studio chief. You need a guy to kind of run traffic. And, of course, there's a lot of talk about Rich Ross, who runs their very, very profitable cable channel, as being the future at the studio in some shape or form.
Well, you're saying they don't need an old-fashioned studio chief. So there's some people talking about the fact that they might have a couple of people who do a number of different roles. But obviously, Rich Ross, who turned the Disney Channel into something nothing, into a major moneymaker for them.
A juggernaut.
Yeah. Is being talked about. It seems to me that they don't need to appoint a new chair of their studios right away anyway, because most of their projects are kind of well underway for the next 12 months, 18 months.
Yeah, they certainly have a pipeline with a lot of stuff in it. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of talk about how great it is. We'll see if it's as great as some of it. I'm questioning. You know, a lot of people talking about A Christmas Carol. I've seen excerpts of A Christmas Carol, Bob Zemeckis' film. It looks maybe very dark to me. I don't know. But, you know, these are the films.
Are you saying Bah Humbug?
you know, we'll see. I mean, you always hear about movies, they sound like unwrapped gifts, and then you sometimes open the box and there's like, that's my present. So we'll see. But there, you know, it's not, you can't have a rudderless ship. And I'm sure there is some surprise that Iger hasn't already had something lined up if they're going to usher Dick Cook out. But I'm sure he has something in mind, and we'll hear about it soon.
Well, some people are saying because he doesn't have somebody in line that proves that this was a kind of a spur-of-the-moment decision. Then there's another faction of people who are saying, you know, months ago he said in public that he thought that the studios weren't performing well and that it wasn't the market that was causing, you know, the downturn in their bottom line, which was kind of a slap at Cook. So maybe he's had it in for him for some time.
Yes, he did take a shot at the film slate. People thought there would be trouble. People did not think Dick Cook would be the guy to get fired, but perhaps some of the underlings.
Well I was going to say, and another reason to think that this was a precipitous decision was that he just appeared at the big Disney confab.
He did Cook at
D23, which is their inaugural event of all things Disney, this kind of a Disney convention at the Anaheim Convention Center. He showed up. He had tons of surprise guests. He had John Travolta in his first appearance since his son passed away. He had Johnny Depp dressed as Captain Jack Sparrow.
Right, full regalia.
Jerry Bruckheimer was there. I mean, so it was really like all the big guns were there.
Well, and that's the kind of old-fashioned showmanship that I'm talking about. But that is, in a nutshell, the difference between Dick Cook's way and Bob Iger's way. And I think it definitely did make Iger mad that Dick Cook did not do the team move and tell everybody at Disney that these guys were coming and use this as an opportunity to promote the event. And in Dick Cook's mind, being an old-fashioned guy, perhaps, I think he believed that he would be selling these people out to the paparazzi, especially somebody like Travolta, who had not been seen in public since his son died earlier this year, and that, you know, these guys didn't need to come. They could have easily wiggled out of the whole obligation, and therefore to use them that promotionally was sort of bad form. And that is an old-fashioned standard, and it's not what Bob Iger would have wanted. So that was definitely the kind of friction between the two of them, and what certainly was regarded as a shortcoming in Disney of not talking about what he was going to do.
Yeah, and relationship is very important. I mean, Johnny Depp, after finding that Dick Cook had been let go, you know, kind of hinted that he might not do Pirates of the Caribbean 4, which he now says he's going to do. But
yeah, Dick Cook's strengths were his relationships. He is the guy who convinced Johnny Depp to be in Pirates of the Caribbean as just without even having a script. You know, he brought him in, talked to him about the idea, and he said yes. And he's also the guy who had to delicately negotiate with Johnny Depp when his makeup was way over the top in the first Pirates. He created this look for himself, and he had to diplomatically explain to him that this is going to not look good in the film.
Well, we'll obviously be hearing more about this. Now, you mentioned D23, this convention. How did that go?
Apparently, it went very well. It was a sellout crowd. There was press coverage, and there were lots and lots of crazed Disney fans. We sent our roving reporter, Scott Immergut, to Anaheim to have a look at this convention. We gave him a pair of Mickey ears and a microphone, and off he went just a few steps away from Disneyland to see what it was like.
Wandering around the 800,000 square feet of Disney Mania, that is D23, I found thousands of people like our friend Alice, mostly white, middle-class adults who came of age in the 1950s and 60s, watching Walt on the wonderful world of Disney and dreaming of a magical, far-off place called Disneyland.
So I'm standing here with
Alice.
I should say you're dressed as Alice in Wonderland with a full-on costume. So tell me, why did you want to come here and spend your Sunday basically, you know, at a convention for a corporation?
I'm a huge Disney fan. I'm a huge fan of the show Lost. I want to check out the presentations, collector's area. I just love everything Disney, and I'm probably going to the park after this. Not in this dress, though.
Here at D23, Alice, whose real name is actually Angela, could find everything Disney-branded and Disney-owned. There was a large booth devoted to the hit show Lost on Disney-owned ABC, where fans could view props, get their picture taken on a virtual set, and get autographs from some of the show's stars. There was a huge display devoted to the High School Musical series on the Disney Channel, including an appearance by a few of the network's teen stars. At the area called Disney Fairytale Weddings, you can arrange to get married in a Cinderella wedding dress and drive off in a crystal coach.
You do need to find your Prince Charming before you come to us, though.
Disney doesn't take care.
No, we don't. Our Prince Charmings are already taken.
A good part of the D23 event was used to promote upcoming Disney movies. Pixar and Disney Animation have a huge presence here, John Lasseter, the creative force behind Pixar and now all Disney Animation, is here in person to introduce clips from Toy Story 1 and 2 in 3D, a new version of Winnie the Pooh, and The Princess and the Frog.
Walt Disney and is the artist. They made these characters. So
it's a measure of just how big a star Lasseter is in the company that he can draw thousands indoors on this beautiful fall day, even with Disneyland itself beckoning next door. But Lasseter says he's not the draw, it's the Disney brand.
You know, there's something that is Disney, right? It's the parks, it's the characters, it's the story, it's the heritage. It's all that stuff that you could be a fan of, you know? It's hard to say nowadays, any other studio, what is a blank movie? You know, you can't really say it. So I think it's what was really exciting about being a part of that. Thank you, everybody.
Still, it's pretty cheeky for Disney to think it could pull off a convention celebrating its own corporate culture. Can you imagine attending an ExxonMobil exhibition? How about a Continental Airlines conclave? Jim Hill, who blogs about Disney, says other entertainment companies simply don't have the juice to pull off something like D23.
I know that Universal has eyeballed the same thing, but that they don't have the warm fuzzies, you know, or they, you know, I mean, face it, nobody is, you know, placing Frankenstein in the crib with, you know, a toddler, you know, whereas, you know, Mickey Mouse, Winnie the Pooh, you know, that's, you know, these are characters you bond with, you know, minutes after you're born.
Still, even the strongest brand in entertainment has to go the extra mile.
It's an interesting time in the industry. I mean, when you think about, you know, the fall off of DVD sales, you know, by 25%, and, you know, the fact that we have the ever-splintering, you know, network and cable channel audiences, that I think Disney feels like they have to actually reach out and power up their audience. They want you to think, you know I own Snow White on, you know, VHS and DVD, but, you know, they made the Blu-ray sound so tempting at this event, I should go pick up a copy of that.
But even at an event produced with near German Bund Rally efficiency, the Disney faithful can still be a fickle bunch, not shy about voicing their disapproval. Miley Cyrus found that out the hard way, having to perform to an audience several decades out of her core demographic.
There was this weird moment where Miley Cyrus came out on stage, and, you know, the fans up until that point had been standing up and cheering for everybody, be it John Travolta, be it Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, that sort of thing. And here's Miley Cyrus, who, you know, just had a hit record. In fact, she performed it live for the crowd, and she got a sitting ovation, if that. You know, in fact, you sort of felt the air go out of the room. It was kind of funny that the Disney fans were willing to go only so far.
As I wandered through the convention center, I couldn't help wondering, would Walt approve? Since Walt wasn't readily available, I put the question to someone who actually knew him, Disney child star Tommy Kirk. Kirk starred in several Disney classics, including Old Yeller and Swiss Family Robinson.
I think he would. The studio is going great guns. They're doing bigger, more worldwide things, an enormous amount of production going on. Sure, it's thriving. I think he'd be happy.
He probably would be. Yet, a tremendous amount of time and money is being spent essentially to woo a crowd that isn't just the Disney marketing department's low-hanging fruit. It's on the ground. The trick is to get these folks to go forth and evangelize what they've seen at D23 and spread the good word of Walt. For the business, I'm Scott Immergut.
The Toronto Film Festival concluded last week, leaving some in the indie world feeling down and out. Buyers were cautious. There were no all-night bidding wars over little films that could turn out to be the next Napoleon Dynamite. To find out if the end really is near, we talked with two Toronto veterans, a buyer and a seller. Tom Bernard is co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, Sony's arthouse division, with an 18-year history in the indie world. And Cassian Elwes formerly ran William Morris Independent. I asked Tom Bernard if Toronto was as bad as all that, and he said, not really.
Going up there, I thought it was one of the better years for movies available. What I thought had changed was that there were not people up there that were unaware of the profit loss of a movie, whereas in years past, there have been a number of movie companies that have been up there buying and have paid way more than they could have ever made back on the movie unless they, you know, won that lottery ticket, which, you know, occasionally happens.
Right.
So I think that a lot of the movies that are going to be there, probably a record number of films will be bought this year. They're just not going to be bought during the festival in a bidding war the way that the middlemen or these people that sort of put themselves between the filmmaker and the seller for a long, long time had manipulated.
Now, Cassian, as one of those middlemen...
He was.
In a very good one. I'll say it so you don't have to. Of course, Tom and Sony Pictures Classics are not known as the high rollers at these festivals, so they do like to buy cheap and sell high, which is a formula for success. But do you agree or disagree with Tom's appraisal?
Well, I think you're starting to see the fallout of the studios exiting. And I'm not referring to Sony and Sony Classics because they've had a long-term relationship, and Sony Pictures Classics, whichever Tom calls it, is Sony Pictures Classics is has been a very successful company for a long time and been supported by studios. But the classic kind of studios trying to get into the independent film business, like the Paramount Vantages, Fox Searchlight's had some success with it, Universal not so much. You're starting to see the exit of these studios from the business. And prior to that, you had Miramax and USA really dominating the field, and they were supported by Universal and Disney. And so they had deep pockets behind them. Now you're seeing much smaller companies that don't have that kind of deep pockets supporting them in the same way. And yes, Tom's right. I think that the business itself has started to change in the sense that, you know, the studios are spending so much money now promoting their movies, it's really hard for an independent film to break through. And this year, you know, there's probably a handful that did over $20 million, and mostly a successful independent film is $5 to $15 million at the box office. And, you know, that, for the studios, is peanuts, and they're not interested in it. And so you're seeing them leave the business, and therefore I think the numbers that are being paid are less. So I agree with Tom. The films there this year were very good, and I do believe that they'll get bought. And unfortunately for the people who are making them, they're going to get bought for less than $1 million a title, which is not going to make anybody that invested in them, you know, run around, whooping for joy. I mean, last year you had really two big films that got bought in Toronto, which were The Wrestler and The Hurt Locker, and then this year, the Single Man, and now, you know, with Tom buying Get Low and Lebanon, you're going to see the same kind of activity, but there's nobody paying huge numbers for films anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of deals in negotiation right now with us and other companies, and I think you're going to see when you tally it all up, the number of movies that played there and the number that got bought are at, you know, one of the higher levels.
Yeah.
Higher levels of numbers at lower prices,
movies,
though, right?
Well, prices that, you know, are more reasonable, and certainly not a price that maybe is five times the budget of the film, because a lot of the indie movies are made on a shoestring, and if a bidding war happens, you know, crazy stuff happens. When, you know, a studio doesn't try and adapt to the indie business, a lot of the old studio companies, they try to change the indie business into a studio business. Mm-hmm. And they're all the businesses of each company in the indie world are very, very different. But the one thing that they all have in common is they're not like the studio business. The profits are there, but the profits have to be realized in a very responsible manner. And you need to approach the business with the concept of, I know how to make more than I spend.
Well, I think you're seeing Tom being absolutely thrilled about what's going on right now in the marketplace, because they're having a free-for-all for themselves in terms of the films that they're able to get. But I do think as Wall Street comes back and the economy comes back, there's going to be new companies that are going to start to appear on the horizon, and they will start to pay more money just because they have to be more aggressive, and you'll start to see that the numbers going up. I'm a glass half full guy, and I think that, you know, you're going to see the business actually improving over the next couple of years, and these numbers start to go back up again.
We'll be back in a minute with more on the indie film business. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. This year, there were no big money deals at the Toronto Film Festival. Since the festival ended, a number of films have been sold, but the prices aren't what they used to be. Producer Jonathan Dana called Toronto an indie film massacre, but our guests are more optimistic. Tom Bernard is co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, and Cassian Elwes is former head of William Morris Independent. What do you think, Tom? Are you the ones who stayed sober while everybody else at the party was drunk, or are they going to get drunk again?
We've been in business now for 18 years, and before that we were in business in the 80s with Orion Classics. And their indie business is always a healthy business. The players just keep changing. And every company that shows up has a different configuration. You have companies that are owned by cable companies. You have companies that are financed by bankers. You have companies that are financed by baseball teams now. You know, there's a very odd collection of companies, but there always has been because people have a taste for it. I mean, Little Miss Sunshine, I think the guy who owns the company was in the movie, you know, because he liked being in the business.
Right.
So
you're the one who told me the story about waiting for the dentist on the Eastern Shore of Maryland to approve a deal at a film
festival. That was a fact. That happened.
Yeah.
The second movie didn't work for him.
I do think that that we've had sort of a, which may not come around again for a while, a kind of golden age of independent cinema where you had, you know, movies being bought for $10 million. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe some movie like Little Miss Sunshine will appear again at Sundance and then everyone will go nuts. I do think that there are companies out there that are waiting to buy a movie for big money if the right thing appears. But they go to film festivals expecting that. And the truth is most films at the film festivals are, by their very nature, independent movies.
Yeah, people will spend that money if they see it. I mean, one of the things that I found very interesting in Toronto this year was how many big movie stars were in low-budget films.
Yeah.
Seems like there are a lot, and some of them in Creation, for example, the Darwin film, and of course now I'm blanking on who the two stars are, but
Paul Bettany and Jennifer Connelly.
I knew I could count on you. Didn't sell.
No, anybody. I'm sure it will. And, Meet the Joneses, David Duchovny in the picture,
Cassian,
you were selling a film with Natalie Portman.
Yes. Which also will get a deal because, she's a big movie star and, it's not going to be one of the high-priced bidding wars for the film, but it will definitely get a deal. As Tom said, every movie will probably find a home in some way. That's the reality that we're all dealing with, which is trying to find a home that will actually give it a real shot at the box office and hope for the best that it's going to, generate income on success rather than just up front.
But, Tom, is it your point that the stars are in the films because they're have time on their hands?
I'm not sure why. I just noticed that, some people are always looking for trends in a film festival, and to me the most interesting trend in this festival was that a large majority of the independent films had big movie stars in them that you wouldn't normally see. You'd see one or two movies with a star turn, but
in my opinion, you're going to see even more of that because having come out of an agency, I know exactly what's going on. The studios are making much, much bigger budget of films, and therefore, because their budgets haven't changed, their overall budget for the year hasn't changed, they're making less films by definition. And so many big stars are not getting the kind of work that they used to or getting paid what they used to. And quite a few of them are sitting around bored, and they have some great little independent film that they'd like to make, and so they'd rather work than not work. And that's why you're going to see even more of this, I think, over the next few years.
On Creation, do you have any sense, either one of you, why this film did not sell? Do you think it would have sold in previous years with it had press at Toronto?
I didn't see it, but there wasn't a lot of very positive kind of word of mouth coming out about the movie.
It's going to sell.
Yeah, I think it will. There's a home for that picture.
The question is for how much, of course.
Right. Well, you never know. I mean, look at Terry Gilliam's movie Brazil. It was going straight to video until he made a big stink, and was a huge success, and won the best movie of the year by the LA film critics.
This business is littered with movies that people thought were worthless that turned out to be huge successes, and that's the beauty of why we're all in it, because you just don't know.
You never know.
Tom, the one sale of any profile that happened during the Toronto Film Festival was A Single Man, which is this Tom Ford film, mm-hmm. which the Weinsteins bought. I assume you guys were not in that.
No, we were not.
And I don't know if either one of you wants to touch it, but would you say this was a film that has a lot of commercial potential, or this was the Weinsteins
I have to say that it's one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. Just aesthetically speaking, it's almost like a Gucci commercial in the way that it's made.
What are the chances of that?
It's beautiful. It's really stunning.
Tom, can you give us any insight why this wasn't for you?
When we were watching it, it was sold.
I see. So it wasn't for you because you didn't have a chance?
It was not a movie that we were looking to pay $1 zillion for. And, Colin Firth was spectacular in the film. But, it was somebody did a preemptive buy with, that big money dollar.
Relatively speaking to what movies have sold for in the past, it's not a gigantic deal.
It was a $2 million deal, right?
No, exactly. And that includes Germany, which they have an output deal in Germany, the Weinstein Company, so they can put it to them for a number. I think where they're really going to have to spend the money is actually promoting it. But it's also quite promotable, and I guess the Weinstein Company would like to get some Oscar nominations at the end of the year.
Yeah, there's certainly that, and like I say, for the marketplace in Toronto, they made a preemptive offer.
Well, Cassian, when you heard that that the Weinsteins had made a preemptive offer for A Single Man, did you think, oh, thank God, somebody did something?
I can't say that I was an active seller this year in the way that I have been in the past. Just working on one film, because normally I would work on four or five, and if I'd been there this year with four or five movies, I'd be, very, jumping for joy that somebody bought anything, but just also very depressed about the fact that nobody is kind of bidding on movies. And I think that movie, definitely got people excited that something got sold, but I wouldn't say that that would be reason for joy, quite frankly, because it's not. When a movie gets sold for $5 to $10 million, that's excitement.
Let me ask both of you this: we do seem to see a historic time in the movie business right now, generally, and not just independents. But have you, Tom, and then Cassian, have you seen anything like this before? Is this seeming like a cycle to you, or does this seem like one of those shifts that really is tectonic plates?
To me, it's very cyclical. Having been in the independent world, it happened in the first quarter of the 80s when the first round of indie companies went out of business. There was a Columbia company. There was Fox had a different company than Searchlight. Universal had a Universal Classic. All the companies disappeared. And then after they disappeared, a whole slew of independent companies came up to life. And those companies continued to multiply through the rest of the 80s. They kind of went on a downturn, and then a whole new group showed up in the 90s.
What hasn't happened for us yet, which is coming, I think, in the next couple of years, is that you're not seeing these big end users appearing yet with these new technologies. So you're not seeing the digital downloading company appearing to start to buy movies, or the VOD company starting to buy films. You're seeing individual distribution companies trying to figure out how to sell to those people, but you're not seeing those people stepping up to the plate.
A Netflix label or
right,
something.
Right, or financing their own movies. Those have traditionally been the people that would appear on the horizon, would be the new end users would come in and say, okay, let's start our own company.
Cassian Elwes is the former head of William Morris Independent. Tom Bernard is co-president of Sony Pictures Classics. Thank you both very much.
And thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And here's a little update. Just after our interview, Newmarket Films acquired the U.S. rights to the Darwin biopic Creation. It's set for release in December. And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood. Hollywood.
Hollywood.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.